Hi, I'm Allison Kubo.
Hi, I'm Roger Goldman. Welcome to Mountain Money.
Last week, I'm embarrassed to admit that I indulged by going through a fast food drive-in and found something surprising in my bag, a job application. Indeed, almost every business you visit these days has help wanted notices posted prominently, some of which are pretty creative. But staffing shortages are just one of the challenges being faced by restaurants of all stripes these days. The supply chain issues we talked about last week are creating other pressures on the restaurant industry, an industry that has been dramatically affected by the pandemic.
So what has the last year been for local restaurant operators? Have the adaptations implemented during the first months of the pandemic created lasting changes in the way business is done? What are the challenges being faced by the industry today? And what do we expect to see in the upcoming ski season? And most importantly to many of us, are the two-for-ones or similar summer discounts ever coming back? I am lucky, and we are lucky, to have one of our area's leading restaurateurs, Kevin Valleca. He is with Shabu, and he joins us this morning to tell us what's been going on. Kevin, thank you for joining us.
Hi, guys. Glad to be here.
So let's start with talking about, you know, what were things like at the beginning of March last year? In Park City, things always get better and better and more busier.
Well, it started earlier than March. To open for last ski season, it required a redesigning of our dining rooms, so every table became a booth table. It required transitioning a 30% of the business to go. We weren't designed. Bob didn't design our menu for to go food, so it was quite a feat to do that. And just how to, you can't lay out our miso cod on a plate real easy in a little box. It just was more time consuming, difficult, but we persevered.
Did you make some significant changes to the to-go menu? I mean, some of that, like you said, some of that stuff didn't work. Did he add some new things that did work?
We did change it. There, the hot rock, the bim and bop, there's dishes on the menu that require certain cooking techniques. People would do the hot rock at home.
Really?
Just pan sear it. You can, or they bought rocks from us. Or they
say,
had their own
rock. Yeah, where do you get the rocks from?
The Uintas.
One of the other things you guys did early in the pandemic the previous year was have those online cooking classes. And did you find that that was a way to sort of hold on to your clientele? They were wonderful, by the way.
We didn't have time to go that direction. It took everything we had to hang on to maintaining the restaurant and this large increase in the to-go business. But then that transitioned in the summer to our outdoor patios opening, and just through the growth of Park City and COVID, so people were out there. It wasn't empty by any means, and our patios filled up and we had to go. So it was the busiest summer I think we've ever had on Main Street.
I know at the start of the pandemic, there was that big worry of, will we ever see people back? And so you look at, you know, June of 2020, and you start looking then at next ski season. Could you have imagined that, you know, you would be looking at, and maybe just describe, like, what kind of numbers are you seeing?
Every restaurant on Main Street got caught shorthanded. We did not see the volume on the horizon this summer. When the national parks filled up, then they went to ski towns. And so, you know, all my buddies from the lower Main Street to top of Main Street were just starving for employees.
And then as well, you know, you were saying that, you know, there weren't enough employees. Sorry, I totally lost that question in my head.
There's just through the growth of Park City and we've done so well promoting summer. You know, it's just the way it's going to be. I don't think it'll slow down much in the summer anymore.
And I think I remember where I was going. You had just told me before we jumped on air that July was having a Sundance every day. Like, if you were to look at your numbers or what kind of, yeah.
I mean, we're a little different because we almost double our capacity with the patios. But yes, we were seeing that kind of volume. And it was apparent when you went to the street and just went to the post office. And just the amount of people walk. If you went to the car-free Sundays or the silly market, you could just, it was, it's so busy on Sundays now.
Let's talk a little bit about the impact of the pandemic on staffing. Prior to the pandemic, I mean, many of the restaurants on Main Street have significant turnover. Some have more stable staffs. Let's talk about what's happened to your staff since before the pandemic, early in 2020, and where we are today. Have you had a lot of turnover, and have you had trouble?
We did. We saw after the closure, two marches ago now.
Right.
Not everyone came back. When they came back, the restaurants weren't the same. We had, you're a server talking to tables. Now you're a server taking a to-go order over the phone. And there was uncertainty about tipping and money and things like that. But as time moved on, we hung on to our good employees, gave everybody a raise, and just hired anybody that came in the door. Friend of a friend of a friend.
And so labor shortages are so tight right now, and it's difficult to find people. You're actually going to be closing for three weeks. Tell us why.
We are. In the 90s, let's say, everybody, that was the greatest job you could ever get on Main Street at a restaurant, because you'd have a month off in the spring and a month off in the fall. Well, the fall has transitioned into people coming, preparing their second home for ski season. It just doesn't slow. We close 2 days a week, but we typically for the last 8 years have just been open through that fall shoulder season, if you call it. But this year we're going to close just to give everybody a rest. Everyone worked really hard this summer, from dishwasher to manager, and everyone needs a break. Because this winter, it's going to tsunami again.
And that's a good question. Are you expecting a tsunami again this winter? I mean, what are the signs that we see?
As I heard on KPCW, ticket sales for season passes are 40% up. I don't even know. I can't even picture that. But, yeah, that's not going to make it slower. That's for sure.
Math doesn't work on that
one. It doesn't work out.
Is there anything? So let's talk a little bit more about how you remodeled the restaurant and how that has impacted your capacity, and particularly how that will impact your winter capacity.
Well, we've done a great job in Park City managing the virus, and people are vaccinated in Park City, not just the service industry workers, but I think our primary residents, because it's a tourist town. So everyone took precautions, and so the seating capacity is back to where it was inside, and people are okay with it. We've kept some of the barriers up in between some of the booths, and but the big ones, the sushi guys aren't in a glass booth anymore. It's nice.
One thing that I know hit many of the restaurants were issues in the supply chain, and whether that's lack of access to certain goods, whether it be like food or other types of items you use for the restaurant, or just even changes in pricing. What types of items have you been seeing?
Yeah, it's both supply-sided and price, supply and demand. So sake, for example, it comes in waves. There'll be shipping containers that must come into Long Beach, and the sake comes here, and we drink it all, and then we're out. So what everyone's doing now is this: instead of buying 5 cases, you're buying 10 cases of every sake. So that's screwing up our
cash flow.
Our Utah DABC and their ordering process. That being said, prices have gone up because there's king crab legs, for example, beef. So we've had to take items off our menu because we've had crab in our spring rolls, and we just didn't want to sell $15 per spring roll. It just wasn't appropriate.
So, you have 10 new items I've heard on your menu coming up. Some of those due to those changes, but give us a little sampling of what
we're going to bring the lamb back. We kind of rotate some of our superstars through, and the lamb's coming back. Bob's adds a mussels dish. I haven't had it yet. We'll start the menu Wednesday.
Okay.
So we've been testing the items, working on the plating, and then Wednesday will be full go.
And that's this Wednesday, so you're going to do a few samples before you close?
We are. We're going to run the menu Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, get everyone trained up, and then we will close for that rest period, and then we'll reopen Friday with the ski season on the 19th.
A couple times we've talked about pricing issues. You're obviously paying more for staff. You're paying more for certain items. Are you and other restaurants seeing upward pressure on menu prices as a result of that? And should we expect to see that more?
It was minimal, a dollar here, a dollar there. won't be really noticeable to most of our travelers that are just coming in. We just, you know, in order to counterbalance that, we just had the Dine Around program on Main Street, and it was really successful this year with our locals. They did come out to Main Street, and that event, I know from what I was tallying, was probably 30% more.
Wow.
So there is affordable dining out there. You just got to kind of watch for it.
Yeah. Now, as we go forward, you know, we've talked about sort of changes that happened as a result of the pandemic. You had an increase in carryout. You had some curbside stuff. What do you think the pandemic will do that changes this industry, particularly on Main Street, in the long term? Are we going to see a long term?
Permanent transitions for sure, with just everyone's done the QR code menus, obviously, and QR payments. And mobile devices, able to order on your phones. I think Deer Valley is going to be transitioning to some kind of modified where you order from your phone and cut down on contact between staff and tourists and people moving around. So,
are you still seeing that carryout volume? In other words, is that a leftover? I mean, are we still
seeing? That's down from what it was.
Down from what it was.
But it's up from where it was pre-pandemic.
That's really what I was trying to get at. Are we going to see a long-term shift where carryout for finer restaurants like yours is going to be a more significant factor than it was?
We have customers now that have only had carryout at Shabu, which to me was, I'm like, what? We've done carryout 5 times. This is our first time inside. It's really cool in here. Like, well, yeah. Wow.
That's kind of how we intended.
We've only had to go. We need to get in here.
Wow. So, again, people, you are seeing still an uptake in new people, which is actually good to hear.
Yeah, the people that moved here, the person that had their second home was in Park City, and they lived from Los Angeles, let's say. Well, they flip-flop that maybe, or have two primaries. I'm not sure how that works, but those people were dining in on Main Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's probably several restaurants like that where you've only had River Horse to go, or Firewood to go, or Sammy's Bistro to go. Or
that's a good point.
So we've talked about the difficulty in recruiting staff. Tell me, what have you had to do differently to try to retain staff? Well, what kind of things are you having to do that are different?
I'm closing for 3 weeks.
That's a good one, right?
Vacation. Doing a lot of hiring people that weren't quite up to task of what it takes to work on a Main Street restaurant. So we brought in inexperienced people, and then heavy training with pay increases as they grew. And now we've got a really great crew heading into this winter. Really excited about it.
And will you keep? Are you going to have a good retention between who you got now and who you'll have this winter? You think you feel pretty good about that?
It's stabilized now. I think we finally. That uphill swim the whole month of July to just like, and everyone working 6 and 7 days a week, just to like, what? It's sold out on Wednesday.
You know, yeah.
So we finally caught up to it.
It was incredible during the summer, Allison. I don't know if you walked down Main Street and you said it had a sua sponte, oh, I think we'll just go out and get some dinner on Main Street. The answer was no.
One thing I want to go back to, as you were saying, a lot of people who are coming now into the industry, they're new. And what we did lose during the pandemic, I feel, is a number of professional kind of wait staff and people who had worked in restaurants. And so service is different.
It's different. Of my core crew, say go back eight years, I probably have in the front of the house three. Out of 20, some 20. And those three remain the same, but we've probably rolled through 60 employees in 10 years, or 6 years, 10 a year maybe.
Wow.
You know, it was flat, but it went really steep during pandemic where we had constant turnover.
So at
why,
this point,
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think because there's so many jobs, people can, you know, pick and choose. There's not that commitment.
Well,
perhaps
they transition. You know, how many of us moved to Park City after college and then we never left? So I think there's people that fell into that type and then went and pursued their career and just got out of the service industry and, you know, now they something different.
Are there any things that the city, that you think the city should be doing differently? I mean, there over the years we've had issues about, you know, what does it cost to park in China Bridge? What does it cost to park on the street? What are the implications of car-free Sundays? Where are you on those kinds of issues?
I think the parking system that's implemented now is working fine. I don't hear, now that the shock of it's, and people are getting used to it, the local people know how to take High Valley Transit to the white bus and get from, you know, say Silver Springs in the same amount of time it would drive. So there is an increase in that, and with Uber, and I don't hear complaints from parking. You know, as far as the weekend events, you know, I don't really want to get too much into the silly market thing, but it's grown, it's super successful. It's just what we've been working on for the last year is balance.
Does a silly market event, does that bring you customers at the end of the day?
It does now, but after it's over.
Right. It's, yeah.
When it's over, then they come out and sit on our patio. But it doesn't increase our lunch business at all.
I would think it probably decreases your lunch business.
Yeah. And in the car-free Sundays, it's another, you know, I'm all about that. I'm about the balance. We work hard to maintain, or the business owners, to maintain the historic, you know, ness of Main Street. And without cars on the street, it looks great. Main Street looks like we imagined it to be.
Now, many of us have speculated that one of the reasons this summer was so big was that Europe was closed, as a practical matter, and that lots of people would try to go to the national parks, and they couldn't, or they were full, or they would come here, and that this was an extraordinary summer in that sense, and next year maybe things will go back to where they were, and we'll get the two-for-ones back. I take it you don't think that's what's going to happen.
I think the two-for-one will not be back. But we'll see different promotions.
Right.
We'll start to come back, you know. Like the Dynabout was great.
That
could be expanded upon. It can happen a couple times a year, maybe, spring and fall.
And that's what I was going to ask. Is the local business still important?
Absolutely. That, without a doubt. And that's what we're looking to. That's the challenging part of the market to get, really. Your Epic and Icon skier, they're just going to come in and float around, and you don't have to really work hard to get them. It's maintaining our locals, and that's what we really, they've got great taste, and we like to be on their good list.
That's a great thing. We have been speaking with Kevin Valleca. He is with Shabu, located right behind our studio here in Old Town.
And we were hoping for samples of sake this morning, but it didn't work out. But it's been a pleasure chatting with you, Kevin.
Week left. Come get us.
All right. So again, Shabu on Main Street, and they can find you at, is it?
ShabuParkCity.com.
Thank you.
And you can make resi straight through there, or call us directly.
Sounds perfect. Thank you, Kevin. The next 18 months are going to be difficult as the economy finds a new stable base to operate from, says Larry Chester, founder and president of CFO Simplified. But planning will allow the smart business owner to not only survive, but take advantage of the opportunities. Larry joins us this morning to talk about how small to medium-sized businesses can prepare for the realities of the new economy as the deluge of government subsidies enacted during the pandemic comes to a close. Larry, thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I did some research on you before we had our segment this morning, and your career experience focuses on helping companies work their way through a crisis. Can you share a bit about your background and how your experience has helped your clients over the last 18 months?
Sure. You know, I was a corporate CFO for 25 years before I started my consulting company. So I worked for a number of businesses, anywhere from, you know, they were like, the smallest one was $1.5 million a year in sales, and the largest was $100 million a year in sales, and in many different industries. And I really enjoyed that because it gave me an opportunity to really help a lot of different kinds of businesses go through the difficulties that they were facing. And some of those difficulties are, you know, how to find enough cash to operate the business, how to operate the business more efficiently, you know, how do you deal with customers, with banks, how do you really plan for the future, and I think be strategic. And when I started my consulting practice, one of the things that I did was I initially started working in business turnaround, helping businesses that were really in difficulty. And one of the classic cases, and this still happens to this day, is a business owner who called me and said that he really needed us to start working for him tomorrow, if you can believe that. And so I arrived at his plant Wednesday morning, and he ushered me into his office, closed the door, and said, "I'm so glad you're here. I really need a CFO. Your first job is to figure out how we're going to get enough money to cover payroll on Friday." These are the kinds of problems that business owners can avoid with good planning ahead of time, but not everybody does, you know. So after that, I worked in business turnaround, helped that business and many others. And I worked for a bankruptcy trustee for 2 years, not only taking businesses that had failed and selling the pieces of them, but also taking companies that had fallen apart and putting the pieces back together and selling them as a going concern. And that was really instrumental to giving me the tools that I needed, in addition to the 25 years of experience before that, to really be able to work with small to mid-sized businesses and help guide them through difficult times going forward. And those difficult times not only are times when a business is struggling, but also there are businesses who are growing so fast that they can't manage the growth. And the entrepreneur literally has a tiger by the tail, and he doesn't know what he needs to do next to keep from falling off a cliff.
The idea of being that kind of a consultant with a crisis management bent and parachuting into companies obviously is a high-stress way to make a living. How often, when you'd come into a company like that, would you look around and say, wow, this could have been easily avoided if only X?
Oh, I think that's the commonality of almost every business we walk into. I think every business owner faces difficulties on a day-to-day basis. The issue is how flexible are they and how willing are they to make the changes that are needed to be able to be successful with any problem that they have. I think the reality is that every business owner or every employee that works in a business faces problems on a day-to-day basis. Every time the phone rings, you never know what that's going to be. Is it going to be a customer who didn't get their order? Is it going to be a supplier that can't ship on time? Is it going to be an employee who's critical to the operation that can't come to work today because he's sick or his wife got ill and he's got to stay home and take care of the kids? I mean, these are all problems that people face on a day-to-day basis. And the question is, how flexible is the business owner to be able to adjust to all those changes that occur? One of the things I say to business owners over and over again is, you have to be willing to accept change and really embrace it, because you don't know what's coming next. And the changes that you have to be able to address may be challenges to the business itself, or they may be opportunities. But if you're not willing to accept and embrace those changes, the world is going to pass you by. You can't be in a position where you say, well, you know, that looks like it's going to be difficult, so we'll just pass on that. I mean, I remember once I was working for a company, and we were a supplier of private label machine tools for Sears. And Sears called us and said, we want you to introduce a new product line for us. And so we went to the bank knowing that we were going to need about $1.5 million to be able to get the tooling, do the designs, fill the pipeline to be able to start delivering to Sears. So I turned to the bank and said, look, we're going to need an extra $1.5 million in addition to our current borrowing to be able to do this. And the banker looked at me and said, well, you guys are reasonably profitable. I think within 2 to 3 years, you should be able to build up that kind of additional cash within your business. And then you can turn to Sears and say, you know, we're more than happy to do that. Well, are you kidding? Sears wasn't going to wait a year and a half for us to be able to, or a couple of years for us to be able to get the money together to be able to do that. So we went to a different bank and they supported us. And we grew that business from $8 million a year to $45 million a year in about 8 years. And that's the key. You've got to be creative, you have to be flexible, and you have to be willing to accept the challenges. I've always considered myself a firefighter. I love going into businesses that have problems and help a business owner figure out what's needed and what skills and what things we need to do to be able to solve those problems so we can continue to forge ahead.
I can only imagine those three things, flexibility, creativity, and accepting challenges, was what hit business owners in the face when the pandemic came. So you had talked about some of the realities that business owners face just every day. what are the realities of this new economy we're in?
Well, I think, you know, the government did what they needed to do to put money back into the hands of business owners who were able to pass that down to their employees so that their employees could continue to live and, you know, pay rent, pay gas for their car, put food on the table. But the reality is that right now the market has changed. That money is no longer available. So business owners really need to be, if they haven't been creative up to this point, you know, they're probably not here anymore. But they need to be able to really understand where their current business fits into the current marketplace and what they need to do to find new customers, to provide new services or new products for those customers, and to continue to survive and grow their businesses forward. And that means not just products and services, but it means making sure that you have employees who are trained and cross-trained to be able to take care of things that are going to present themselves. And you need to make sure that your supply chain is sufficient to be able to service the products that you're building or the services you're providing to your customer base. And take a look at your current customer base and say, what are the things that they need to be able to survive and to be able to fill their needs, and how do you provide those services to them? You know, the interesting thing is everybody's looking for new customers all the time. And the question is, if you have a customer, how do you keep that customer satisfied so that they continue to buy from you? So when you talk to business owners who are your current customers, one of the things that you need to continually address is, what more can we provide for you? What are the things that you need that we could potentially deliver to you in spite of the fact that you're maybe currently buying that from somebody else, or it may be something that you're thinking about in the future? How can we work as a partner with you to continue to grow your business and therefore grow ours at the same time?
Last week, I happened to be in downtown Washington, D.C. at lunchtime, and I went into a nice restaurant, and it was less than a third full. Two years ago, it wouldn't have been that way. What are you seeing in terms of the long-term changes as a result of the pandemic, particularly with respect to things like real estate and office space? And how do you think companies should be adapting to that?
Well, I guess the question is, you know, there's two sides to every equation, and you know, there's supply and demand, and that's really what's driven the capitalistic economy forever and will continue to. I think that the commercial environment is certainly facing challenges right now. I have a client that is literally an owner of commercial buildings, and what they've been doing for the last 18 months is buying more buildings.
Wow.
Because the real estate market in the commercial area is somewhat depressed, and they've been buying additional assets because their feeling is that things are going to come back. People are not going to continue to work at home for the next, well, let's call it the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. There is a need to work in a central business district, in a central business area. I mean, I happen to live in Chicago. The downtown area of Chicago is not going to disappear. These high-rise buildings are not going to be vacant. People are starting to move back into them now. But I think that there are things that are going to change in the market. I think people are working at home and are going to want to continue to work at home. I think that's shifted the work-life balance. People are in a position where they can now walk their kids to school in the morning as opposed to having somebody else take care of their kids to get to school and be latchkeys on their way home. They can spend that time to make sure they get situated. But they need to spend a certain amount of time in the office because that personal collaboration is very important, that interpersonal collaboration. I mean, I've been on Zoom for 2 years now, I think, as everybody has, okay? And I had an in-person meeting with a networking group that I'm involved in, and the biggest shock is seeing people in person because, you know, everybody on Zoom is the same height.
Some of us find that as an advantage, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, no, I am one of those. Okay, but the reality is that I met people who were significantly taller than I thought they were, or significantly shorter than I thought they were, because you just have no frame of reference. And I found also that people work, I think, people work more efficiently face-to-face. I know people that have adapted their work style to being online and have said, look, I have no interest in going back to a face-to-face environment where I have to drive for a half an hour to a meeting and drive for a half an hour back. How inefficient is that? I could have had two more phone calls, two more selling opportunities in that interim. But what I found is that when I'm sitting face-to-face with a business owner, I can hear his breathing. I know what he's nervous about. I can see, you know, how he's reacting. I can see his body language. I can interact with him much more easily and much more quickly. I think you develop a relationship. We are human beings. We develop relationships by that personal contact. And I think that that's going to return. I am certainly meeting with more people face-to-face now than I, in the last 2 months, than I have in the whole 18 months prior to that. And I think my business is reacting to that from that perspective. Our clients are asking us to be in on site more frequently than they were previously. I think people are anxious to get back to that face-to-face.
That example and where you had taken the investment in commercial real estate really talks about risk and time frame. And so when business owners are looking at the next 18 months, how should they be weighing that? You know, we don't know when things are going to come back, but the risk also has some great rewards.
Well, for the last 2 years, and I, you know, I don't want to say that I predicted the pandemic, but I have been talking about a recession and a drop in the economy over two years ago. And what I said to people was that they needed to really conserve cash and to reduce debt, which is the same thing I'm telling business owners now, because during a recession, there are opportunities for the strong companies to grow. And what does that growth look like? Well, the growth looks like this. There are companies that are going to fail. When those companies fail, there are assets, customers, opportunities that are sitting there by the sidelines. And the business that has been prepared, that has not spent themselves to the point where they're using 90% of their credit line, where they have built, they have all their money tied up in inventory and don't have any cash available, those companies that have been prepared and are able to make moves moving forward are those that are going to be able to buy their competition, buy additional product lines, buy additional manufacturing capability, buy additional customers, bring on additional employees, and expand their market.
You know, earlier,
that's happened in the last recessions too, and it's certainly, I think, exists today. And I think there are businesses that are not going to be able to recover as quickly. Certainly the hospitality industry is still struggling and is going to struggle for a while. But from a manufacturing and a distribution point of view, I think there are huge opportunities available.
You know, earlier in the interview, you mentioned someone adopting what I would think of as a contrarian strategy, which is to buy additional commercial real estate in the face of this downturn. Can you share with us other anecdotes about clients or others you have seen adopting a creative and interesting approach to the current environment? People who are doing something different.
You know, it's interesting. There are certainly businesses who have seen opportunities where they have taken advantage of them. For instance, you look at liquor manufacturers who have shifted at the beginning of the pandemic and stopped producing vodka and gin and other things and produced hand sanitizer instead. But I have a client who is a printer. They print cocktail napkins and accessories for parties and entertainment events. And what they did was they went into the printing of masks for people. So if people wanted to get together, they would print a mask that said, you know, thanks for coming to the wedding of Bert and Shirley, you know? And so they printed these masks. And quite honestly, their business grew during the last 2 years because this was an opportunity that they took advantage of.
And
I don't know that anybody would have anticipated that. Yeah.
one thing, again, while they have that great idea they could follow, I'm assuming they had then those resources that you're talking about. They had cash on hand to be able to either buy new equipment or, you know, in new inventory. Like, were they in a good state in order to be able to take that jump?
Yes, and I think the key here was that they had the equipment to be able to print the masks and the distribution facility to be able to distribute them and the order processing to be able to process the orders. What they needed to do was get the raw material, the masks that they could then develop. And so they found a Chinese manufacturer to develop the masks for them that they had been buying other paper products from, other napkins from, and they turned to them and said, look, can you do this for us? And bingo, they did. And certainly they had cash to be able to buy that inventory. And that's why I always look at business owners who say to me, and this is really kind of a classic, they say to me, I need a new bank. And I say, why do you need a new bank? And they say, well, my bank's not giving me enough money to run my business. And I say, well, why suddenly don't you have enough money to run your business? And they said, well, you know, things have happened and now we're up at the top of our credit line and I asked the bank for some more credit line and they're not giving it to me. Well, the problem is, how are you using that credit line? And I think the issue is, do you understand what your cash flow is within a business and are you using your money efficiently and effectively? So the company that is using 50% of their credit line on an ongoing basis, that is using their credit line for what it should be used for, which is the variances in cash collections. So, for instance, if you have a large customer and they don't pay you for 3 weeks, well, you can't turn to your employees and say, hey, look, John's manufacturing company didn't pay us for the last couple of weeks. They're late in their payments. So we're hoping you guys can just sit tight and hold on for your paychecks for a couple of weeks. You know, it's up to the manufacturer, the business, the employer to have enough cash available to cover those variances in cash collections so that they can cover their ongoing overhead expenses. Well, if you're operating at 90, 95% of your credit line, you're not able to do that. If you're using your credit line to cover operating losses, you're not going to be able to do that. A company that's using 25 to 50% of their credit line and then is paying it down. So if you've got, and I'll just use simple numbers here, if you've got a credit line of $100,000 and you're borrowing generally $30,000 to $40,000 on an ongoing basis, and then you get a lot of money in and you pay it down to $10,000 and then you buy more inventory and you have to buy that and pay for it, so that jumps up to $35,000 or $40,000. Well, then you sell that inventory and you pay it down again. I mean, that's what a credit line is to be used for. It's not because you opened up a new line of merchandise that you're selling and you're losing money on it. And so you're using your credit line to shore up the losses for that new product line that you produced. I'm sorry. So if the bank turns to you and says, no, I'm not going to give you additional money on your credit line, there's a reason why.
Last week we did a show about complexities in the supply chain. Talk to us a little bit about how you've seen businesses successfully adapt to the current problems we're seeing worldwide and supply chain issues.
Oh, boy. If I was a genie, I'm telling you. I think that this is an issue that's really global, certainly, and I don't know that there's any quick solution to it. I was listening to somebody the other day who was saying that they expected this problem to resolve itself sometime within the next 6 months to a year. That's a long time. And I don't know what businesses are going to do who are depending on bringing in product from China, for instance, who there's no alternate supply for them. I think that's one of the things that's going to drive inflation. Because if I was a business, I'm just being honest with you, if I was a business and I had a limited amount of product and everybody needed it, and I didn't have a ready source of resupply, what am I going to do? I'm going to raise my price. If people need my product, let them pay more for it to be able to shore up my bottom line. I think that's just logic.
And I'm not sure exactly what people can do to solve that problem. I know that years ago when I was working for a company and we were importing product from China, and Long Beach was all booked up. I mean, there was no way of getting things through Long Beach. We moved some of our products so that they were coming on shipping lines or going up to Portland to other inbound ports so that we could have product coming in that wasn't being tied up in Long Beach. But I think the entire Western Seaboard is tied up. And I've heard also that there, because of all of the ships that aren't being unloaded, there's another problem, and that is there's no containers for people to put product on. The containers are all tied up on ships waiting to be unloaded. That's a multiple problem, and I'm not sure exactly what a solution is other than just letting the problem work itself out.
Well, we've been speaking with Larry Chester. He is the founder and president of CFO Simplified. Larry, your breadth of experience has definitely helped open this conversation and provide a new perspective. Thank you for your time with us this morning.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
The Bow Collective swung open its Park City doors in 2015 as a fitness and social hub for Parkites to challenge themselves physically, involve themselves internally, and enjoy themselves socially. In 2021, the Bow Collective made a move to relocate to the Park City outlets. Here to talk about it is founder Whitney White Kozlowski. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Good. Well, you've got a lot that we can talk about today.
Yes.
Let's start first and have you give a background of the Bow Collective for those that don't know what it is.
Of course. We started back, it'll be 7 years ago in November. I know. So I was a fitness instructor in town and a mom and a hotel concierge at that point. So as I was looking to do something different fitness-wise, I started to think through a concept that would just change things up a little bit and have more of a team atmosphere versus just specific classes that start and end, and you never know who's going to be there. You never really know exactly what to expect. And so I came up with this concept and really started it out with just two different times a day that I did it, and we started in the basement fitness facility at Hotel Park City, which to this day, I know. Did you know they have one there?
Oh. I knew they had a spa.
Okay. Yeah. So there's a gym there. And it's one of the most special places to me. And somehow I emailed people out. I maybe did a social media post. And like I said, I was teaching at the time. So I knew a lot of people in this town, a lot of moms and dads. And I just said, is anybody up for something gutsy, something just a little bit different? This is what it is. You'll sign up for 12 weeks at a time. It's 12 people, and we roll just like a team. And it sold out in just a couple days. And at that point, that was major for me. That was 24 people, and we were going to go all the way together week after week. But what that did was show me the power of accountability and cohesiveness. And while I love fitness and all the classes that are out there, there is something special about having teammates. And it took me back to when I would play volleyball in high school, and like, your friends are great, but there's something super cool and special about the people that you are teammates with.
And I think sometimes it's because, like, as teammates, we don't necessarily choose each other, but you all are working towards a common goal. And while you say you started with that philosophy, this is something you've kept on, right?
Like, yes.
It's the camaraderie that you're building that,
absolutely,
that people seek.
Absolutely. So we want it set up that each time, like, when you register for classes, you're really putting skin in the game, and you're in for a month at a time. Say, we used to do pre-pandemic 3 months at a time, but you're in, you know that your time slot is yours, it's reserved, and what that does is everybody else in that class treats that time spot the same way. Like, it's an appointment, it's in their schedule, they look forward, they know who they're going to see. And so I actually have seen and witnessed such neat friendships form, such great accountability that way. And camaraderie, absolutely, connection, community.
Can someone new join? Because as you talk about it, it's a group, it's a team.
Of course.
You know, does it fill up, or do you feel, you know, for me, I get nervous coming into a group of people who are already like part of their own gang.
Absolutely. And I think that's what I'm so excited as we start to open up more spaces. It can be so welcoming. And it's, for so many people, we call it day one phase, when people walk in and everything feels new. But once you trust that these people are all such good people and we're all in it to elevate each other, and we literally, the greeting is a big deal where we are, and it's just, come on in, don't worry, do what you can, we'll meet you where you're at, and then you'll start to see, like, okay, I actually, now I'm ready to give more, be more, and really kind of lean in onto what's going on there.
It's a dedication of sorts.
Yeah, I think so. It feels that way. And again, fitness is everyone's there for a great workout. But I think what's so nice in the value of it, you end up getting so much more. And some people truly, like, come in, work out, and leave. And it's not, and that's fine, and that's all they need. But then the people that want to contribute a little bit more or take and connect a little bit more, it's there too.
You just recently made a big move. So you were at Hotel Park City.
Yes.
Then you moved to the old Snowden, which was Highway 224.
Yes.
By the temple. And
the barn. Would you believe right before that we were at the temple outdoor?
No, I didn't
yes.
know that.
So location number two,
so
the amazing
on.
People at the temple, we were outdoors that entire summer. And then we moved to Colby.
Yep.
And then we moved to Alpine Distilling, and now we're at the outlets.
Well, tell me about the location. You know, it gives you something different than what you've had before, right? You have a retail space.
Yes. So this came suddenly over the summer and very unexpectedly. And the irony is it's the closest I've been to my house. So right there, it's a win and fun for my family. And then it has no freeway for a lot of people, which was a factor before. And the parking's amazing. I'm talking about all the basics of the outlets. Like but when you really look at the space, we were able to come in and our crew together, such a short amount of time brought that space to life. It used to be a Bath and Body Works. And now it's so different.
Does it still smell good?
It still smells so good. You'd be shocked. But now it's a retail space that's open every day from 12 to 6, which is really new for us. We've been fans of learning retail and really our favorite brands, being able to showcase them for our people. But now for anyone traveling through the outlets, not Park City people, it's really people from out of town that I love. I was talking to people from Florida, from, you know, just New Orleans, different places, people coming to see Park City. So it's a neat opportunity to kind of be an ambassador for the town in a different way. But then behind the wall, it's the best fitness setup that we've done. It really, really is fantastic. So I really like it. I think it's simple and easy. And once you get right past that little block of the outlets, you do see, like, I think everybody just kind of needs an outlet to plug into.
Absolutely. Ooh, there you go.
Yeah.
with that, we talked about the location. You're going into that arena, but what you've kept consistent is the type of workout. So you do a HIIT workout.
HIIT 45 minutes, and they've remained that way for 7 years. So the modality is just its strength, core, and cardio on repeat in a variety of ways. We lead you through everything. So even a first timer could come in, really whatever feels comfortable for them, they do. It's all a workout that you're guided through, but you just do your level. And truly, since the pandemic, people have felt comfortable coming back. People just do what feels good. And that's what I love. I really just like opening and making space for people to come in, work as hard or maybe as little as they want to. They just want to be somewhere. So it's that whole focus of intervals, high intensity. Some now we have equipment that's even better for our lower intensity fans, right? Just people that want to be there, but just need to go a little bit less.
So you have something for everyone. Our time is wrapping up. So let's have you tell the listeners how they can find out more.
Okay. So always the Bow Collective website or Instagram will give you all the latest updates. And we enroll month to month. So November is actually coming up this week. It opens today, actually. So that's available online. Every class is $20, but you can come and try one, no problem. So you can email me, text me, find us on, or just stop in and say hi and let us just kind of surprise and delight you when you walk through the doors.
It's a great way to end the interview. We've been speaking with Whit with the Bow Collective.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the show, make sure you leave a review no matter how you listen. And we'd appreciate it if you clicked 5 stars.